Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the Extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
Today we're reaching back into our archive to hear an encore edition of River to River.
Iowa has the fewest number of OBGYN specialists per capita of any state in our country. This hour, we want to explore the overall lack of maternity health care resources and practitioners in our state, especially in the rural areas. What are the trends? What's driving these trends? And what are some solutions to improve access to maternity health care? We'd like to have you join our conversation as we have several guests with different perspectives this hour. For instance, have you or a loved one had some trouble accessing maternity care or postpartum care? Has a birthing center, a maternity care provider, closed where you live? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's start off with Jessica Dill. Jessica is the manager of centralized development with the March of Dimes. March of Dimes, of course, a maternal health nonprofit. Jessica, welcome to our programs.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
You have a big report that looks not just at Iowa, but at the nation at large. The 2022 Nowhere to Go Maternity Care Deserts Across the U.S. report. Tell us about the key findings of this report.
For sure. Yeah. So we released the 2022 Maternity Care Desert Report in the fall of 2022, which actually covers the stats from 2021. One of the biggest key findings, and specifically in the state of Iowa, was that 1 in 10 babies were born preterm. So preterm is before 37 weeks of gestation, and obviously that increases the likelihood of complications and infants having a NICU stay, families having issues through their health care. Some of the bigger findings were that there actually was a 2% increase in the number of counties that are classified as maternity care deserts. And maternity care deserts are what you would think of when you think of there's no access to care in the entire county. And that equates to over 1,100 counties across the country that has no access to hospital care, or OBGYN care, or even midwifery care.
Let's take the first point you mentioned, 1 in 10 babies, 10% of live births born preterm in Iowa. Why is that significant? What factors determine whether a baby is carried full term, which would be, of course, the best for the baby?
Yeah, so there's a lot. I mean, there are definitely probably close to hundreds of factors. One of the major factors that we look at are access to care. So prenatal care is so important when talking about pregnancy and even postpartum. And if you are not receiving prenatal care, you're not seeing a care provider, they can't catch the smaller issues that sometimes snowball into bigger issues. Things like UTIs, which can cause preterm labor, those are easily missed by someone if you're not getting that prenatal care.
And of course, that ties into your other point about maternity care deserts, because if you don't have any maternity care options in your county and have to drive or take an entire day off, you're less likely to get that prenatal care. Is that the connection?
Yes, absolutely. And even part of the connection we're trying to create is that even in counties where it looks like there is access to care, if you're living on one end of that county, it still can take sometimes 45 minutes to an hour just to get to your care provider. So while the findings were huge, the issue is actually even larger than what we can report.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the number of providers that you're seeing in the country, the trends there, perhaps zooming into Iowa as well. What are we seeing?
Yeah, so in the data, the initial data shows a decrease in hospitals providing obstetric care. So there's hospitals basically closing down their labor and delivery units, partially majority-wise because of funding, Medicaid reimbursement, and healthcare providers. So on the report, there actually was an increase in OBGYNs. However, there's a trend of those healthcare providers shifting out of rural communities. So then we're getting back to this kind of cyclical cycle of the rural communities are already struggling. However, we can't create access to care because of funding.
How much does the impact of COVID, the pandemic, have to do with the numbers that you're seeing? Or is that something you can even tell?
That is actually something we looked at. The cumulative effects on maternity care access, we still have not been able to fully measure it. I'm not sure any of us or anyone doing research will necessarily be able to get to that point for quite a few years. We do know it brought numerous and rapid changes to care globally and put a huge stress and strain on healthcare providers, which obviously is seen in healthcare providers getting burnout and actually leaving their healthcare profession.
Tell us about insurance. I see in this latest report in 2021, about 1 in 16 women of childbearing age, 6.5%, was uninsured in our state. What's driving that, and what are the implications there?
Yeah, part of that is it goes back to the idea of maternity care deserts. They are not getting connected with health insurance providers. And there's also a concern about healthcare providers and health insurance providers and the care that they're going to receive. They've seen family members, they've seen people on the news die in childbirth, and they're concerned about seeking out care and seeking out medical insurance to help provide that care.
So you say it's connected. It's not a matter of insurance not being available. It's that people are unwilling. We need to raise some awareness about this.
Correct. Awareness is a huge piece of the puzzle that, especially in more rural areas, awareness is a huge piece that I think would help support some of these people in their access to care.
Mm-hmm. We have to go to break in just a minute or so, but Jessica, what are some of the other key statistics that jumped out at you we should focus on in that report?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that stuck out to me was broadband internet access, because one of the things, especially through COVID-19, that were pushed was telehealth. And honestly, that's one of our major drivers, is can we get families in more rural areas access to broadband so that they have better access to healthcare providers?
And so that's really, COVID really pushed us ahead there. And that's a plus. That's a silver lining from the pandemic that we could use to better serve rural areas.
Correct. Yes.
But we need that broadband, don't we?
Yes. Yes. That's one of the biggest things, is trying to get internet to areas that don't have access to internet or don't have access to internet that's fast enough to be able to offer video and things like telehealth services.
Okay, Jessica, stay put, please. We'd love to continue talking with you after a short break. Jessica Dill, Manager of Centralized Development with the March of Dimes. We're exploring a lack of maternity health care resources and practitioners in Iowa this hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from IPR News.
Support for IPR comes from Orchestra Iowa, presenting the movie E.T., the extraterrestrial on the big screen, accompanied by the Symphony Orchestra performing the score live, May 3rd and 4th at 7:30 at the Paramount. Tickets at orchestraiowa.com.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
You've been listening to an encore edition of River to River.
Exploring the lack of maternity health care resources and practitioners in Iowa, especially in the rural areas. Joining us for the first part of the program, Jessica Dill, Manager of Centralized Development with the March of Dimes. I started off by telling you one of the statistics from the report, Jessica. Why is Iowa at the bottom of the list? The fewest number of OBGYN specialists per capita of any state in the country. Why would Iowa land at the bottom of the list?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. And I think part of it, again, goes back to Medicaid coverage and how much care providers are getting reimbursed and how long Medicaid is covering care for families in the state of Iowa.
Mm. Medicaid, the nation's public health insurance program for people on low income. Talk a little bit more about that when we see, especially in rural areas, Medicaid reimbursement playing a factor of, if a clinic exists, is that tied into clinics closing or a lack of practitioners?
Yes. The payout actually from Medicaid is traditionally much lower than public MCO insurance companies. So while it's a wonderful program for families to be able to access care, unfortunately, the flip of that is how much care providers are being reimbursed for those services.
Mm. Okay. Now, when clinics close, other services provided by these clinics are lost. Talk a little bit about some of the other services that we may connect with maternity or women's health that are lost in chiefly in rural parts of the state.
Yeah, like basically anything you could think of that comes to mind with women's health, just breast exams, abdominal exams, pap smears, anything that women would traditionally head to the doctor for on a regular basis. And a lot of, especially women, are much more comfortable going to care providers that specialize in gynecological care and OBGYN services to talk about those specific things. So they may still have a family practitioner in the area, but they don't necessarily feel comfortable going to them to ask questions and get services from someone who is more generalized.
Mm-hmm. Disparities that exist along the lines of race and ethnicity are part of this report. Talk about that. How big are these disparities?
Yeah, so actually in the state of Iowa, the preterm birth rate among Black women is 36% higher than the rate of all other women.
Mm.
So, which it's pretty close to that across the country from what we've seen. There are higher numbers and lower numbers, but it's the disparity is huge. And that's definitely something that March of Dimes talks about and is not afraid to talk about, because Black women are dying at a higher rate and having more preterm babies than white women. And women of any other ethnicity at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. What's behind these disparities? What's driving them?
Implicit bias is a huge one, and different social determinants of health. There's a whole range of social determinants of health that go into some of those disparities. And at this point in time, something we're seeing and something I know other people can speak to as well is Black women are actually frightened to go get care because they know that they have a higher chance of death. And so they're seeking out care providers and doulas and midwives that look like them, and finding those people, again, especially in rural areas, is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk with a midwife in just a moment, add her to our conversation. But before we do, Jessica, tell us, what are the solutions to these challenges? So what are the current priorities of the March of Dimes?
Yeah. So one of our biggest priorities is to expand Medicaid, basically to more individuals who fall at or below the poverty level. We also want to extend Medicaid coverage postpartum. So currently the limit in most areas is 60 days. And what we've done is we've advocated, we've lobbied, and we're still pushing in many states to get postpartum Medicaid coverage all the way up through the first year after they give, after women give birth, mm-hmm. which gives them access to all sorts of health care, mental health care, because mental health during the postpartum period is one of the biggest issues facing all states across the country.
And what are the obstacles, Jessica, to that expansion, if that would help a lot?
Basically, it's a legislative process at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So we lobby, we go to different states. These things are put forward. However, they have to be carried forward by someone who also stands behind making this accessible.
Mm-hmm. We all know that politics our hyper-partisan politics is entering every facet of our life in the recent years. I want to ask you how politics, I know you're non-partisan there at the March of Dimes, but can you, in general terms, talk about how our current politics are shaping maternity health care and access in various states and in Iowa?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that March of Dimes does, as I said, is we look at research. And so sometimes it does, in many instances, it takes time for us to actually see the ripple effects of some of the decisions that are made. It may take years, it may take months. And so we are just at this point, especially with some of the more controversial decisions that have been made, at this point we are monitoring issues and looking at the research as it is released, things that affect maternal and infant health, like COVID-19, access to care, Dobbs. Like, we continue to monitor and look at how we can help and keep fighting for the health of families all over the country.
This hour, talking about the lack of maternity health care resources in our state and generally across the country, maternity health care deserts. Many of our counties in Iowa lack even one area. How many counties in Iowa is that, Jessica, that would say would be completely lacking in any health care resource for women?
We actually, at this time, we're releasing a brand new report. August 1st, We will have a report that is released by state down to every single county, which will have all of that information in it. Mm-hmm. Right now, the report from 2022 just really looked at the country as a whole.
Okay. Let's add to our conversation, Bethany Gates joins us now. Bethany is a certified professional midwife based in Vinton. Hi, Bethany.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for being on. You've been listening in to our conversation thus far. Tell us a little bit about your background. What inspired you to become a midwife?
Yeah, so I have been a certified professional midwife for the past 6 years, and I started down that path in 2012 after I had two of my own children. My first was born in a hospital 45 minutes from my home. That was the closest delivering hospital to me and the closest delivering hospital that had midwives, which was the type of care that I wanted to receive. And then my second daughter was born at home under the care of midwives. And part of the reason I pursued becoming a midwife myself was because of the lack of midwives and maternity care providers. I had to drive, like I mentioned, 45 minutes to get to the care that I wanted just to have my first daughter. And even to get midwifery care for a planned home birth with my second daughter, I was driving an hour for prenatal care. So it was an access issue. It was a type of provider available issue. I live in Benton County, and we don't have any hospitals that do deliveries on purpose anyways. My local hospital sometimes gets those ambulance births from women who didn't have time to make it to the hospital. But in great part, there just was a big lack of midwifery care. And I saw an opportunity to be able to fill that a little bit by pursuing that route myself.
Mm-hmm. For the listeners who don't know and perhaps haven't seen that very popular BBC series called The Midwife, what does a midwife do, and how do they differ from obstetricians, for example, from doulas?
Yeah, so midwives provide the same type of prenatal care that obstetricians do, with the exception that midwives are not surgeons. So if you're seeing a midwife for prenatal care, whether this is for a planned hospital birth or a planned home birth, they're still doing the fetal heart tone monitoring. They're still doing the health monitoring for the mother. They're still offering the routine ultrasounds and tests during pregnancy. But if a cesarean were to become necessary throughout the course of pregnancy or labor, if there was a complication, then that care would be transferred over to an obstetrician. So a doula is not a midwife. A doula does not provide that medical piece of care for women. So they are not responsible for monitoring the well-being of moms and babies. They provide more like that labor coaching, emotional support. So very, very much a different type of provider, but one that is also evidence-based to help improve maternal health outcomes.
You've been a midwife, as you said, for about 6 years. Rough estimate of the number of births you've attended?
I stopped counting at 100. So okay. As I mentioned, I do home births. So I've attended over 100 home births in the past 6 years.
Well, it must be wonderfully satisfying. But when we look at the lack of maternity health care in our state, what are you hearing from clients? You have your own personal story of having to travel a great distance to have your own children and get care for you as an expectant mother. What are you hearing from clients? How big of a problem, based on your one-to-one experience with mothers in the Vinton area, is access to care?
It's a problem. So I serve, just because of where I live, a lot of women who live in rural areas, and it's not unusual for me to have clients in care where the closest hospital that does deliveries is 45 minutes away. It's an issue for almost any woman in a rural area here in Iowa. And even for women who are planning a home birth and seeing a home birth midwife, the next question is, where can they go for ultrasounds and lab work? Because they are still rural. So they still have to travel for those things as well. But I mean, it's not unusual for women to be a good 45 minutes from their hospital. And a lot of women, that limits their options for the type of provider they can see. So if they want to see a specific type of provider, they have to make that decision. Can I commit to driving further to have that care? Is that a decision they want to make, to be that far from their delivering location?
Okay, thank you very much for joining us. Bethany Gates, a certified professional midwife based in Vinton. And we'll say also goodbye and thanks to Jessica Dill, manager of centralized development with the March of Dimes. Jessica and Bethany, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
When we come back after a short break, we continue to explore the lack of maternity health care resources and practitioners in Iowa, especially as you've been hearing in our rural areas. Also, how the Dobbs decision of last year by the U.S. Supreme Court and Iowa's new abortion restrictions, now blocked temporarily, may affect health care in the state. When we return, it's River to River from IPR News.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program.
Glad to have you on board on this edition of River to River from IPR News as we're exploring maternity health care, specifically in the first part of our program, the lack of those resources and practitioners in Iowa, especially in rural areas. But in this part of the program, we want to add to that how the 2022 Dobbs decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, also Iowa's new abortion restrictions, now blocked temporarily by an Iowa court, may affect health care in the state. Joining us for this final portion of the program, Dr. Atoll Grover, Executive Director of the AAMC Research and Action Institute. Dr. Grover, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
For those not acquainted with your institute, give us a thumbnail to start off with, an introduction to your organization and its mission.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity. So the Association of American Medical Colleges, which is where the Institute sits, works with major teaching hospitals and medical schools, researchers at those institutions across the country, including places like University of Iowa. And one of the things that, you know, we do is provide a large portion through those institutions of healthcare to the nation. And we run into the same issues that all Americans do when it comes to problems with healthcare access, quality, mm-hmm. and cost. And so the Research and Action Institute that I head up was established a couple of years ago to try and focus some research on those problems that affect not just academic institutions and academic medicine, but all of American health and healthcare. And so if people are interested, they can go to AAMC.org/institute for more details.
Doctor, you are the co-author of a new report titled Training Location Preferences of U.S. Medical School Graduates Post-Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization Decision. Explain this report, what you're tracking in it.
So one of the benefits of being seated at the AAMC is that we actually run the application service for new physicians who are graduating from medical schools and applying for residencies where they will train to be specialists, whether that's in family medicine or OB or plastic surgery or whatever. And so we have some up-to-date information about the application behavior of new physicians and where they are interested in going, what specialties they're interested in going into for training. And it's a pretty competitive process, but we have a whole program called The Match where people go through and figure out where they're going to go train for the next 3 to 7 years. And what people have been asking us really for the last year since the Dobbs decision struck down Roe was, hey, how does this really affect new physicians as they decide where they want to start their training and where they might practice, especially because about half of physicians will stay in the same state on average where they did their residency training. And so what we found was, in looking specifically at US MD graduates, like folks at University of Iowa done after generally 4 years, They generally have the most flexibility in where they can pick. They're very competitive candidates. And so we said, where are these folks choosing to go? Mm-hmm. And has that changed in terms of the states where they're choosing to apply for residencies? And the short answer is yes. And what it looks like is that while we saw a small decrease of a couple of percent in applications overall from that group, states that were home to programs where there was complete bans or limits on gestational limits on access to abortion actually saw a greater drop off of closer to, you know, 1.5 times that for all specialties. But in OBGYN, what we found was that you were about twice as likely to have USMD graduates try and avoid those states where abortion was banned or drastically limited. So we think this has implications for the long-term health of people in all kinds of communities, not just pregnant people, but also others who may be affected by doctors deciding not to go practice in states where they feel that their ability to practice medicine to the best of their knowledge and skills is limited.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Atul Grover, Executive Director of the AAMC Research and Action Institute. I hope you can field a question that comes from one of our listeners. Dr. Gary in Grinnell writes, what role, if any, does the hostile climate in our state legislature toward women's health care issues play in our state's inability to attract or maintain an acceptable number of these specialists? I think you've touched on that, but I guess broadly, to add on to what Gary said, you know, your institute is nonpartisan. Nevertheless, what can you say about how our current politics are shaping specifically maternity health care and the training of doctors for it?
Well, it might be helpful for Gary to sort of step back and just think about what affects physicians' choice of where they want to practice. Part of it is where they grew up, where their family and spouse are from. But part of it is what's the environment there. And people typically talk about things like malpractice rates. But if you think about, you know, physicians' reactions to being sued, they really don't like being sued, but they want to be indicted even less, right? So if you're talking about the criminalization of what we in medicine see as part of the spectrum of care delivered to our patients, that's going to potentially, you know, disincentivize people from practicing in the states where that's happening. Just to give you some numbers on it, about 70% of all health professionals, when they are surveyed, and health professionals, students believe that there should be access to abortion care in at least some circumstances. And there are some specialties like adolescent medicine that takes care of kids and young adults from the age of about 12 to 20. 96% of those physicians believe that abortion needs to be available and legal in at least some circumstances. So I think when you are creating barriers to the ability to practice care in a way that the physician sees as the way that's going to benefit patients the most, that's going to disincentivize them from going to those places.
Mm-hmm. Laura, one of our listeners writing to us about birth complications among Black women. Comment on that, if you could. The effects of racial bias. We heard an earlier guest talk about implicit bias, and perhaps, you know, there is training for implicit bias so that can be avoided.
Yeah, there absolutely is a discrepancy, a disparity in the outcomes for Black pregnant women and their babies that are much worse all over the country. Those are accentuated in areas of greater poverty, in rural areas, in any places where patients are more socially and structurally disadvantaged. But I think you know, one of the things that's also been of concern to medical educators and clinicians, and really all of organized medicine, that's happened in the last couple of weeks as well, is the striking down of the use of race as one of the factors that we use as part of a holistic review in admissions. That Harvard UNC case that made those changes just a couple of weeks ago is probably going to more severely limit our efforts to improve the diversity of the health professions And that's particularly important because we know that not only do minority patients tend to prefer physicians and other health professionals that resemble them in some way, but we also know that adding a diverse class of individuals to our health professions education means that our overall education is better and the questions that we ask from a research perspective are more complete, so that we're better able to address in the long term how we actually improve outcomes for pregnant people and children from all backgrounds. And that's a real concern right now.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, we have about 5 minutes left. Tell us a little bit more about who you work with at the Institute, who you're trying to influence in changes, what changes, and with what effect or openness are you being greeted?
Well, I think, you know, one of the benefits that we have is working with fantastic institutions, with great academics at places like University of Iowa, is that we have access to some of really the best experts in the field of medicine and public health and science. And so we try to collaborate with a variety of people in institutions, at other think tanks, at other universities, and try to take an approach to some of these topics that is nonpartisan, as you mentioned, but that is really kind of in plain English to say, look, here's what you need to know about these policies, in this case, to restrict access to abortion. You know, probably there's overlap with policies such as the one signed into law in Iowa recently around limits to gender-affirming care. I just want people to understand that these policies have some implications and potentially unintended consequences that we're not going to tell you what to do about them, but I believe that policymakers should be able to use this information in a way that better educates the decisions that they are making for their communities, their patients, their states, their nation, and really is honest about the trade-offs. Because I'm not sure any of us would have really known for sure that these laws around restricting care for women would potentially discourage all kinds of physicians from practicing in those states, but it looks like it probably does.
Mm-hmm. And so when you look to the future, what will your institute be keeping an eye on? Because we're only a year out from the Dobbs decision.
Yeah, so we want to definitely keep track of monitoring that data. I think I also would love for, you know, the state legislatures, the governor's office, and places like Iowa to do more data collection locally, because the only way we know for sure that this observation is really borne out in what people are actually thinking and how they're behaving is we need to ask them locally in Iowa, hey, if you're not choosing to practice here, or if you're leaving the state and you're a midwife or you're a physician, tell us why. And I think that's critically important to understand. The other thing that we'll have coming out in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, will be a look at rural healthcare. And as you've been talking about today, rural healthcare has some unique challenges. There are fewer physicians per capita. Right now, it looks like access to rural healthcare services, at least in primary care, seems to be pretty much on par with urban areas. But where we're really lacking is some of the specialty and subspecialty care and just the sheer distances that have to be traveled by these patients to access it. So that's something else to look for in the coming weeks and months.
Mm-hmm. Are there any easier remedies here to getting better access to rural areas that people involved in forming public policy could use, in your opinion?
I think one of your prior guests brought this up. The issue of broadband applies to so many aspects of people's lives right now. And our experience with telehealth over, you know, the period of the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic demonstrates that it's something that patients want to use more, that it can improve their access. Now, it doesn't reduce the need for medical providers and clinicians, but it does make the care a little more accessible for our patients. But that means that we ought to be taking some of that infrastructure money that's been appropriated in Washington over the last couple of years and laying the last couple of miles of fiber of broadband into every one of Iowa's rural communities. And if we need to think about, you know, how to prioritize, just lay a map of where those maternal care deserts are, where the mental health care deserts are, and prioritize broadband in those areas, because those are the folks, I think, that, you know, are really in most need of the help and having the most difficulty accessing it physically, locally. But there's more we can do with technology.
Mm-hmm. In the final minute, Dr. Grover, tell us, what is your vision 5-10 years down the road if some of these solutions are adopted?
So, you know, I think there's the vision of a future I would love to see, which is, you know, better information available about how our clinicians are behaving, what patients need, so that state, local, federal policymakers can make informed decisions, whether or not I agree with them personally. I think we need to increase the training of physicians, which is something that has to happen more at the federal level for support of that, because that's been limited in the last 20 years. I think we need to find a way to overcome the rulings around not being able to use issues around race and ethnicity in some of our decisions, because we know diversity improves the function of teams, particularly in healthcare. And I think if we really want to improve the health status of populations, we need to think about some of the other drivers beyond clinical access, like poverty, like education, like nutrition. And those are very long-term projects that I hope we will start to really tackle more seriously.
Okay. Dr. Atul Grover, Executive Director of the AAMC Research and Action Institute. Dr. Grover, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to an archive edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.